Welcome to TechNet Radio, your guide to the IT universe.
Well, hello, and welcome back to TechNet Radio. I'm Aurora Queen, and this is our show for Tuesday, January 9th, 2007. Today, we bring back Matt Hester, who is speaking with Jason Buffington, and they're going to be discussing Data Protection Manager version 2. DPM was specifically designed to protect and recover SQL Server, Exchange Server, SharePoint Portal Server, and Windows File Services. And after that interview, we'll have the January Security Bulletin with Kai Axford and Mark Griesi. But first, here's Matt Hester interviewing Jason Buffington on TechNet Radio.
My name is Matt Hester here for TechNet Radio, and I'm interviewing Jason Buffington today. Jason, why don't you tell them a little about who you are?
My name is Jason Buffington. I'm a Senior Technical Product Manager for the System Center Data Protection Manager product. That is Microsoft's entry into the backup and recovery space, and I am responsible for message and field and partner readiness.
Oh, outstanding. Well, thank you for taking your time out of your busy schedule today, Jason. We just want to kind of touch on, we had some really good recent news about this thing called DPM. We had a new version releasing. What in the world is DPM, Jason?
So DPM, as I mentioned, is Microsoft's entry into backup. You know, backup has been around, you know, for as long as servers have, but Microsoft is trying to respond to the customer demand of, we need something better, and oh, by the way, we kind of like it to be from the vendor whose workloads we depend on, whether it be Windows File Services or Exchange or SQL, et cetera. So System Center Data Protection Manager actually first came out, it's DPM 2006, came out in September of 2005, and that was primarily a disk-to-disk-based solution. So our goal was improving people's backups by doing disk-to-disk before they did tape. And specifically to your question, earlier this year in September, we announced the public beta of DPM V2, and that's going to really broaden what we protect and how we protect it.
Okay, Jason, the DPM sounds really cool, disk-to-disk. What do you mean? How does Data Protection Manager actually work? What is it? What's the underlying technology?
Sure. So first of all, recognize that what most people are really dissatisfied with when they look at their backups is the idea that if you're only doing nightly tape backups, then you're going to lose, on average, about a half a day of data and most of a day of downtime when you're trying to recover from it. You know, if you figure that if you lost a server first thing in the morning, then you didn't lose much. If you lost a server at the end of the day, you're going to lose an entire business day. Split the difference. Figure you're always going to lose half a day of data. And for almost all environments, that's no longer an acceptable solution. So when we first came out with DPM 2006, it was around reducing the amount of lost data, specifically around file servers first and foremost. So what we do is we introduce an agent on each production file server. It captures in real time the actual, just the byte level changes that occur on individual user files, and then on an hourly basis sends that data back to the product, to a DPM server. So the immediate benefit is you will never lose more than an hour of data. You know, you'll never go back to, you know, hey, let's go get last night's tape. It's, you've got a live copy of data on spinning disk, no more than an hour old. Now, the next benefit that comes out of that is DPM 2006 provides up to 63 shadow copies or snapshots of the data, which gives you multiple disk-based points of restore. So if it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon and I've lost a file, or I've hit save and says save as, or something along those lines, instead of going to last night's tape, which didn't have any of my work on it, I could get the data back as it existed at 3. If I don't like that version, I can take it from 2. If I don't like that version, I might take it from 1. So I'm recovering from disk, which is already spinning and has just an hour worth of incremental changes. I'm not going back to last night's tape. So there's some really huge benefits in terms of reducing lost productivity, improving customer sat. And the last thing we did around customer sat was we wanted to give end users the ability to restore their own files. You know, one of the things we hear really clearly from customer IT departments is that that the idea of constantly restoring files because John or Mary hits save and says save as, it's a constant interruption to IT team productivity. So what we wanted to do was give end users the ability to restore their own data. Well, when we talked to customers about what that would need to look like, they said really clearly that, you know, if my end users have to learn something new, they're just not gonna. They're gonna continue to call the help desk. So we gave them that restore capability directly from Windows Explorer, or from any Microsoft Office 2003 or better application. So those are the big goals around DPM 2006, were protecting the data more granularly than nightly, so we're doing hourly level protection, empowering end users to restore their own data and lessening that burden on IT. And as a result of doing those two things, the other major benefit that DPM 2006 customers got was the idea of centralized backups. So now you can get rid of all the tape drives in the branch offices and pull all that data back, just those actual byte level changes, back to a DPM server. Get the branches out of the business of backing up themselves and letting corporate IT do that instead. So that's how the DPM 2006 product works, is by pulling all that data back, and then you could use whatever tape technology you want on the back end from any one of our numerous Microsoft partners to do long-term, you know, what did it look like last month or last quarter, et cetera. So that's the 06 product.
Oh, outstanding. So you mentioned shadow copies. I seem to remember shadow copies is something that was built into the file shares of Windows, I believe 2003 is when we first saw shadow copies. How does DPM differ from what we have there today with Windows 2003, and what does DPM add as a value to those shadow copies? Because it seems like a very similar technology.
Yep, it is. In fact, we actually leverage that. DPM 2006 leverages a lot of different existing and well-tested technologies as part of its infrastructure. In the case of shadow copies, if I had, say, 40 branch offices, and I wanted to have shadow copies on that data, you could have, you know, those multiple instances to recover back to. But the problem would be that the shadow copies would be on the same volume as the live data. So if you lost that volume, or you lost that server, or you lost that site, then you'd lose all the back iterations as well. You would also have the challenge of the shadow copies would get consumed in space, and so some branch offices might have 3 weeks' worth of shadow copies, and others, because they have more data changing, might only have 3 or 4 days' worth. Instead of having to manage that extra space and having a variance in how much protection you actually have, DPM 2006, because it's a consolidated server with a whole bunch of extra disk on it, means you don't have to manage each set of shadow copies remotely. Instead, you just got this big server that's got a whole bunch of disk behind it, and it's going to provide shadow copy functionality for all of the branches. In addition, by the way, you're right, that shadow copies first came out with 2003, but DPM actually still provides that functionality not only for 2003 and above environments, but also for Windows 2000 servers as well. So for those environments that are unable for whatever reason to upgrade past Windows 2000 server in some of their branch office environments, they can now also get shadow copy benefits as well.
Oh, that's fantastic. So it's kind of like you've taken shadow copies and centralized them and put them on steroids so we could have a real robust experience.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, fantastic. That's awesome. So kind of want to talk a little about the agent that's running on those servers. Does that agent really impact those servers? Are they still going to be able to do their job well?
No. We actually tell customers to expect something in the neighborhood of 3 to 5% CPU memory and I/O overhead. Because really the only thing it's doing is the file system filter. It's capturing the file writes as they occur. It's dropping them to a synchronization log file, which is just an NTFS log that sits on each production volume. And then on an hourly basis, it just syncs those minor granular changes. It's going to be no worse impact than if you did the smallest of differential backups, you know, just those actual files that have been changed, but spread that over 24 hourly synchronization increments. So really, really, it's a low impact thing. Now, there's a lot of things that changed in everything we just talked about. With the DPM V2 things. We want to make sure we cover those as well.
Oh, yeah, we'll definitely talk about those. I want to make sure people have a really good understanding on how cool this technology is, because I think when we released DPM, the first version, it was kind of under the radar a little bit. It was a great product. Let's get it out more in the open, and let's talk even more about V2. But I want to make sure people understand that underlying technology, because it's very important, because I get asked those questions all the time. Hey, this is going to impact my server, and it really doesn't. And when you think about how much data we're protecting, what I just heard, and this is something that's very key to the DPM solution, is that this is not, you know, if I want to use DPM to protect 1 gigs of data, I don't need a 1 gig hard drive to get that. We're just getting the differences, correct?
That's correct. So we're just going to grab those small byte level changes, so we're not pushing whole files across the wire. And then on the back end, that's where you put that really scalable disk. So really, economy of scale is going to be a big part of it. We're really pretty super efficient as far as how that bandwidth goes. We have built-in throttling, so and by the way, it's built for an IT generalist. So for all you have to do is say, I've got a 256 line and I want to use 30%, or you know, whatever that happens to be. It's a pull down for the topology, a percentage number for what you want to do. So we're going to compress it, we're going to throttle it, we're grabbing just byte level changes. First, they're stored on an hourly basis, and you can actually change that. You know, for example, in some environments, you may say, you know what, my WAN is so saturated, I just can't do anything during the business day. Let's just queue it up all day long, and I'm just going to send it at night. And that's still umpteen times better than trying to do centralized backup of the whole files, because it's still only grabbing the actual bytes that changed, or the blocks, or whatever it happens to be, whatever the granularity of the write was, and sends just that burst across. Catch it up in the morning, it's all good to go. But the bottom line is that because it's so efficient, you really can get rid of tape drives in the field. At Microsoft, we're using this internally. We believe in using our own products. We have 115 branch office or remote offices using 213 production file servers across the globe. And we've pulled the tape from almost all of them. We're pulling all that back to either a data center in Redmond, a data center in Dublin for our EMEA operations, or the data center in Singapore for our Asia Pac. And collectively, we're saving about $1.4 million U.S. per year in optimization and backups. So
wow, that's
huge benefits in that.
That's a lot of saved tape.
It is. It is. And, you know, for every small tape drive that you don't have at a branch office, you just put in a slightly larger changer back at corporate. And you can spin tape 7x24 because you're not impacting the production users. There's no open file issues on the back end because the users aren't accessing. It's just a better way to do backup.
So we're talking about data here. It's still very important that customers have still a regular backup of the operating system. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Now, for that, if you go out to TechNet, there's a TechNet article on protecting system state with DPM. So in that case, what you'll do is you'll just use the native NT backup utility to routinely, say maybe weekly, drop the system state down to a BKF, and like any other file, DPM will happily take that newly created BKF file, it's only a few hundred megs, and pull that back to the DPM server. So now, you know, in our case, you know, we've got, you know, a couple hundred branch office servers. If one of them were to blow up, I can start with a generic OS. I can drop the system state back on, which makes it back to the character of that server. The data's ready to go, and then drop ship that server overnight back in that production environment. So certainly, yeah, you want to protect the applications, the OS, and the binaries, and then the data now is going to have no more than an hour of data loss. So it's a great solution for centralized backup, but because of the end-user restore capabilities, it's centralized backup with decentralized restore, because now the end users are restoring their own data.
That's fantastic. Now, you mentioned end users can restore data. I presume, because we're all administrators listening to this right now, and it's good to be the administrator, I'm presuming we can recover those files for those users as well.
Absolutely. So from an administrator point of view, you can use the DPM UI, and you can either search for the files, you can browse them from the server side, or you could do anyone who has rights to that file, including obviously a domain admin might, and just go to any Windows Explorer and restore the data from there. Now, as administrators are listening to this call, my guess is just around 50% of them are saying, man, I'd love to get out of the business of doing restores, and the other half of the listeners are saying, I don't trust my end users. I don't trust them with that kind of ability, that they're going to shoot themselves in the foot. And what I would say to them is that you can only restore data that you have the rights to see and rights to. Okay, so end users, they already have the ability to hit save and says save as, right? They already have the ability to shoot themselves in the foot and delete data or delete their buddy's data in a group shared directory, etc. What this gives them is the ability to restore their own if they choose to. And if they don't, that's fine, because you've already truly optimized the process. You're going to have a much higher rate of successful recovery, just because of the fact you're coming from spinning disk instead of having to mount or even locate before mounting tapes, and there's no indexes that are corrupt, and all the pain that's associated. So if you choose not to use the end-user recovery, you're still miles ahead of where you were just by recovering from live and fast disk. But if you empower the end-users to do that, you also get a higher customer sat, and you get out of the business of swapping tapes.
Oh, that's fantastic. So we as administrators, it'd still be good. We can make that file back, but once again, we can make that decision to whatever fits our business's service level agreement to our users and how we have to get those files back for those folks.
Yep.
That's fantastic. So, Jason, I want to spend just a minute because I've heard about some of the changes with V2, but I want you to kind of tell, you know, why is V2 so significant? What are some great things that we put into version 2 of DPM that folks should be checking out if they get a hold of beta, some things they need to be looking out for?
So as really cool as DPM 2006 is, there are some customers out there that have been waiting with bated breath for DPM V2, and the reason is because it protects the rest of the Microsoft server workloads. So it has native support for Exchange, native support for SQL, native support for SharePoint. So to give you an example, in DPM 2006, you can protect SQL, and there's a Microsoft KB article that tells you how to do it, but what you're actually doing is you're grabbing the SQL dump after the fact, or you're grabbing a BKF of Exchange, you're grabbing a quiesced copy of some SharePoint files. So you're not actually, it's just files. It just happens to be files that represent SQL. In DPM V2, you are protecting storage groups, or you're protecting SQL databases, et cetera. So you're actually having a live agent, which is contextual. So those are the really big things, is the fact that now all the major Microsoft server workloads are protected with DPM V2. And what we've really done is, because we're not trying to be every kind of backup to every kind of administrator, we're focused on the Microsoft server workloads. And what that means is that we've really put a lot of focus around what is the best possible way that we can find to protect and the most reliable and most flexible way to recover. And as an example of that, think about Exchange. And we're protecting Exchange 2003 and 2007. If you want to restore a mailbox in Exchange, or what most people would call a brick-level restore, in most solutions, you would have to have first done a brick-level backup. So, Matt, what that means for you and me is that if I have a large PowerPoint in my mailbox and you have the same large PowerPoint in your mailbox, if you had first had to do a brick-level backup of each mailbox, then that tape is going to get really big because there's now two copies of that attachment on there. Otherwise, you would not be able to do a single mailbox restore without first rebuilding the entire server. Well, in this case, you can actually do a complete backup, but then a brick-level restore. So in this case, DPM V2 will allow you to protect the storage group as a whole, so just one instance of the entire store, but let you restore an individual mailbox, a public folder, a database, or the storage group as a whole. So really, really big advances from that perspective. Other things that we did that were application-centric is that in a lot of environments, if you wanted to, say, restore a SQL database, you had to restore it directly into a recovery database first, and then the SQL DBA would come and actually do the rest of the restore. Well, the challenge is that means that if something goes wrong at 3 o'clock in the morning, that means the storage guy or the backup person has to first do the restore. Then the SQL DBA has to come and actually stage the data, da-da-da-da-da. We want to make that a lot cleaner. And this actually gives a lot of control directly to the application stakeholder, the SQL DBA, the Exchange admin, et cetera. So as an example, you could just go straight into the DPM UI and say, you know what, I want to restore directly back into the live SQL database. It handles all the rest of the plumbing for you. One of the other things which is really exciting and probably the thing that most application stakeholders are interested in around DPM V2 is what we're calling lossless data recovery. Lossless data recovery means, I should mention, by the way, we shrank the synchronization window from hourly to every 15 minutes. So every 15 minutes, we are pulling the data from the changes from the production servers back across. So
that was one of the pushbacks that we got with DPM, the first version. It was an hour late. Can I go literal than that?
Yeah.
Not V2, correct?
Yeah. They said an hour was great. Can we do even better? And the answer is yes, we can do better. So we got it down to 15 minutes, which makes it really, really efficient. But here's the fun part. So I'm synchronizing every 15 minutes on my SQL database. So I'm getting just whatever data has actually changed within the SQL database every 15 minutes, and I'm pulling that for days and days and days and days. Something happens 14 minutes into my next synchronization window. Well, I can get the data back as of that last 15-minute sync, but with lossless data recovery, what that means is that if you follow the best practices of having your transaction logs on one volume and the database on the other, then after we've restored your SQL database to the last 15-minute increment that we have, we will go out to the production SQL server and grab any other transaction logs that had been successfully committed to the production data and automatically reapply them back into the SQL database so that literally the very last committed transaction to your SQL database will be back online when the SQL, when the database is restored.
So
That's huge.
Yeah, that is huge. So the potential here is that we can even get within inside of 15 minutes because of the way the data will store in those transaction logs.
Absolutely. If you want, if you have a failure of a database disk as an example, and you need to get the entire thing back, if you have followed these best practice deployment guidelines, we will get you back to the very last committed transaction that SQL honored. And you know, Exchange is a transaction-based database as well. It works the same way. And SharePoint is SQL backended. It works the same way as well. So really exciting from a restore capability. The last option for restore is that you can actually we did two major reveals with DPM v2. One was we wanted to broaden what we protect, so we added SQL, SharePoint, Exchange. And the other was we wanted to broaden how we protect it. And what I mean by that is DPM 2006 was a disk-to-disk only solution, and you would then leverage a third-party tape product for long-term archiving. DPM v2 has native tape support built in, so you don't have to also have a third-party tape product in order to do this. So you can now just do, if you're a smaller shop and you just want to do a better backup, then DPM v2, just going disk to tape, a traditional backup solution, is now an alternative for you. If you're in a really large heterogeneous environment, you might use us for the disk-to-disk piece, so the Exchange guys can be more confident, the SQL administrators can be more confident, and then still use a third-party solution to back it off to long-term tape. And the best of all solutions, of course, is disk-to-disk to tape. So we're going to pull it back to disk first, later pull that off on a managed rotation back to tape, and even beyond that, if from a restore capability, let's say I have a SQL database and... I'm in an accounting system, for example, and I've gone ahead and I've adjusted my month-end operation, and it happens to be, 11:30 in the morning on a Tuesday. Well, that's probably not the time when my tape is normally scheduled to spin. But if I want, I can say, you know what? I just did my month-end. All my accounts have just closed out. They want this as a good point to come back to a year from now, if they had to. And so I can say, I want to make that a recovery tape as well, and dump it directly from that last 15-minute increment without infecting the production users, pulling it off that second copy, I can restore that to a tape and then take that for offline use. So really, really flexible and seamlessly integrated tape and disk with 15-minute synchronization points for all the major Microsoft workloads. It's a really exciting solution.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, we just have a couple minutes left. I want to ask you a couple more questions, Jason. Aside from Microsoft, what other scenarios have you been seeing customers deploy DPM, either V2 or DPM, that might have kind of surprised you of how they're using it? Have you seen anything out there that's been really unique?
Really unique. It's not so much unique. What's been really gratifying to see is just that everyone who looked at – there's a lot of people that have been really happy with DPM 2006 and were grateful for their business and their patronage. But there have also been a lot of people who just said, you've said all along since DPM 2006 came out that V2 was coming and that V2 was going to have Exchange, SQL, and SharePoint. I think I'm just going to wait for those. And you know what? They did. I mean, everyone who has said, hey, I think I'm going to wait a little while, they've waited. They've come and they've gotten the V2 public beta, which is out right now, and they said, yeah, this is what we were waiting for. They weren't looking for Microsoft to be all backup to all things in all ways, but they assumed correctly that Microsoft would deliver a really, really compelling, better backup and a more reliable restore capability for Exchange, for Microsoft Exchange, and for Microsoft SQL Server, and for Microsoft SharePoint. That Microsoft backup would be something that you'd want to do. And for those of you that are looking at or thinking or hearing today, really want to encourage you to come check it out and see that this really is something viable. The first public beta came out in September 27th, so it's been out for a couple months now. We will have a second public beta, which is the rest of the feature set. It'll have so beta 1 has SQL and Exchange and tape. Beta 2 has SharePoint, system state, bare metal recovery, SAS deployment, tape encryption, a whole bunch of other stuff that will be mostly feature complete. And then the plan is that we should actually RTM over the summer and ship soon after. So really, really exciting time, and you're going to want to start looking at it now, providing some feedback and getting ready for DPMV2.
Okay, so where can they get the actual beta for DPM? Is a URL I know we'll post with the radio interview, but where can they get it? And is there any good resources they can get a hold of? Like, do you have a blog that you want to send people to, Jason? They can ask
actually everything good is around, is on Microsoft.com/DPM. So it's going to have links to the it has direct links to the download for beta two for V2 beta one. The current shipping product, DPM 2006, with Service Pack 1 on it. So if you're one of those, by the way, who you know likes to wait for the first Service Pack before you deploy and you need file server protection, you should go be looking at DPM 2006 SP1 today. You can get that there as well. You can get product information and comparative information for DPM 2006 and or V2. And then also there's links for the blogs.technet.com/DPM. The news group is really active. We're starting to see really good storage community pickup. But pretty much everything good comes first out of Microsoft.com/DPM.
Oh, that's fantastic. So once again, Jason, thank you very much for your time talking about this exciting technology around Data Protection Manager. And folks, I'm telling you, if you haven't had a chance with the beta, the fact that we can get a hold of Exchange and SQL is incredibly useful among the other many things that Jason talked about today. So my name is Matt Hester for TechNet Radio. Thank you and have a great day.
Thanks, Matt.
Matt Hester and Jason Buffington on TechNet Radio. Next up is the monthly security bulletin for January. Here's Kai Axford and Mark Riesi.
Welcome to today's security bulletin for January. My name is Kai Axford, and I am a senior security strategist with the Trustworthy Computing Group. And today I have with me Mark Riesi, who is also on our response team. And he's also in the Trustworthy Computing Group. Okay, and so for 2007, we are releasing a total of 4 bulletins, which is great, right? We start all over with a count of 07, 01, 07, 02, 03, and 04. So you're going to keep track of those big numbers, but we're just going to go ahead and start off with a brand new year. And Mark, why don't you tell us a little bit about the 4 that are coming out? How many critical are we looking at here? What products are they affecting?
So we have a total of 4. There is one that's rated important, and that is addresses a Microsoft Office issue with a grammar checker. The other 3 are rated critical. 2 of those affect Office, and 1 of those affects Microsoft Windows.
Okay, great. So just to quickly go over the grammar checker, I didn't really think that could be a problem. What, are we talking about all grammar checkers, or which grammar are we talking about here?
It's actually just one. It is specifically the Brazilian grammar checker. And I don't know if folks notice, but when they usually install Office, if they do a custom install, they have a choice of installing multiple grammar checkers, and each one is relative to an individual language. And this is independent of any language packs that you may or may not have on your machine. So, for instance, I use the English version of Windows, and I don't have any other language packs on there. But when I install Office, I could actually have multiple grammar checkers. So this is specifically the Brazilian. And this would only have affected you if you would have installed this particular pack, and you would have had to have done this on purpose. So it's not something that is by default or you would have done by accident. You would have literally had to go into install and specifically check Brazilian. But if you don't have it on there, don't worry about it. It doesn't affect you.
Okay, good. And it's an important, as you said before, right?
Correct.
Okay. So, Mark, I see the second vulnerability, 07002, actually affects Excel. What in Excel is it actually attacking?
So basically what's happening here, Kai, is that there is a something called an IAM data record. And as Excel parses through an entire file and looks at the various records that it uses to build up the spreadsheet and things underneath the spreadsheet, if an attacker actually sent you a malformed IAM data record in an Excel document, then they could actually exploit this vulnerability and then take control over your system.
That's bad. That's a bad scene right there.
Absolutely.
A bad way to start off the new year is have somebody remotely control my machine.
Absolutely.
Now, is this something public? I mean, did Microsoft, was this publicly disclosed, or did Microsoft kind of find this on their own?
No, this was not publicly disclosed. We did receive information about this vulnerability through responsible disclosure from one of our researchers.
Okay, cool. Good. Good to know that they're out there helping us make the product more secure, as opposed to just trying to make it worse.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, the third one, 003, looks like it has something to do with Outlook.
Correct.
Okay.
This is another one of those malformed record things. I'd be surprised if most folks heard of the IAM data record on Excel. Well, we have a vEvent record on Outlook, and it's basically the same type of attack. It's coming in kind of multiple ways. So, for instance, the vEvent vulnerability is a record vulnerability. So if you actually sent something in Outlook that sends over a malformed vEvent record, then a user can attack your system. There's another vulnerability that can be done that's actually a denial of service attack. And there's yet a third vulnerability within this package that's being fixed that has to do with the .OSS file. And that file is the Office Saved Searches file. So those are the three vulnerabilities that are being fixed in Outlook with MS-07003.
Okay, great. So the first three affected Office. The last one, 04, affects Windows. Can you tell me a little bit about what it is that what the vulnerability is, and what can the bad guy do if he's able to exploit this vulnerability?
Absolutely. So MS-07004 is a vulnerability that is in the vector markup language of VML. So VML is a way of displaying things through a web page. And this exploit is if exploited, can cause remote code execution. And VML is something that we actually use every day. It's used in an XML-based engine and how when you actually create XML documents up and so forth and how they're actually displayed on your screen. VML is part of the language in the XML engine.
So, Mark, I know the first three affected Office, the last one affected Windows. Does this affect my Server 2003 boxes? Does it affect my XP Service Pack 2 machines?
Yes, that is correct. So this particular vulnerability is found in Windows Server 2003 Service Pack 1, as well as 2003 R2, and it is found in Windows XP SP2.
And what about Vista? Is it in Vista at all?
No, it's not in Vista. And one thing to also note out is that this is a vulnerability in Windows, in a component of Windows. So even though we talk about XML, we talk about displaying things on a web page and so forth, this isn't an IE vulnerability. It is a component of Windows.
Okay. Well, let's talk about Vista just a brief second here, because I've heard that there's vulnerabilities in Windows Vista, and we're hearing a lot in the field that the perception is that Windows Vista is supposed to be secure. There are supposedly already vulnerabilities. What's the deal with that? I mean, why is Vista not 100% secure?
So that's a great question. First of all, Microsoft never said that Vista would come out the gate 100% secure, and nor have we said that about any of our products. As a matter of fact, no company that creates software can ever say that their product is 100% secure. The reason why you're seeing things out so early, or what's perceived as early, is that we spent a lot of time with the beta process. And we sent out beta versions of Vista to more users than we ever did before and earlier on. So you would actually, if you think about it, you would expect to have vulnerabilities sooner. It's not that they're sooner, more than we started the beta process earlier. Had we started the beta process later, for instance, as we've done in the past and had more of a limited scope of the beta process, then these same vulnerabilities they're finding now, they would have just found, a few months from now.
Okay, so Mark, with the software's development lifecycle and the security development lifecycle that Microsoft's been kind of touting, we've been talking about it for a long time out there in the field. How is this, working to help reduce the number of vulnerabilities that are actually existing in our products, especially Windows Vista?
Yep. So one thing to keep in mind about the SDL is that, as good as it is, we're constantly refining that about every 6 months. So as new types of vulnerabilities are found and new attacks are found, because remember, as Vista has closed off whole categories of attacks that no longer can be done, and we keep raising the bar and raising the bar. So as we raise the bar, so does what the SDL can test for and what we're aware of. But as you know, as more sophisticated attacks are discovered, then we continue to ramp the SDL to be aware of those new types of things. So the SDL, again, isn't 100%, but it's something that we're continuously working on and adding and expanding.
Okay, great. And I know Windows Vista, for those of you not familiar, and if you're not, I suggest that you get familiar with this. There's tons of new features in there for security, like the user account control, the Windows Service Hardening, ASLR, kernel patch protection. There's tons of stuff out there now. And so if you're an IT pro or anybody out there who deals with Vista, you will see this stuff. So make sure that you are ramped up sufficiently on this. In closing, Mark, do you have any other things, like any other information about the upgrades that we're talking about today? Is there any place we can go for more information?
Yeah, I mean, all the normal places we always have, you can go online, and the security bulletins are always there. You can go to Microsoft WAC Security. There's always some great guidance there. And one more thing to kind of talk about what you just said about all the new features in Vista to keep in mind is that all these features play, a key part. No one of these features, is the silver bullet for Vista. They all work hand in hand in more of a defense in depth model, and to protect you at various levels. But there's some really terrific features in there. Definitely recommend that when you get a Vista, if you had a chance to see it already, that you poke around and play with those features, understand what they're about. And, as usual here at Microsoft, we're always looking for feedback, good or bad. So, send us an email and let us know what you think.
Great. Okay, well, that's it for this month, guys. And we will see you guys again next February.
Great. Thanks, Kai.
And that was our monthly security bulletin here on TechNet Radio. If you'd like to check out the Security Bulletin webcast, that's tomorrow, Wednesday, January 10th at 11 a.m. Pacific Time. And I put the direct link to that up on our site, Microsoft.com/TN Radio. To find out more in detail about DPM, check out two webcasts. They're coming up, and they're both with Jason Buffington. The first is a TechNet webcast titled Protecting SQL Server with DPM. And that's January 31st. It's a Wednesday at 9:30 a.m. Pacific Time. In this webcast, Jason will focus on how DPM can provide continuous data protection for SQL Server. And the second webcast is also a TechNet webcast titled Protecting Your Exchange Server with Microsoft System Center Data Protection Manager. And that's Thursday, February 22nd at 9:30 a.m. Pacific Time. In that webcast, you'll see how to protect servers running Exchange Server 2007 and Exchange Server 2003 with DPM. I posted the links to both of those webcasts up on our site, Microsoft.com/TN Radio, or you can visit Microsoft.com/webcasts for more information on those and also other upcoming webcasts. So that's all I have for you today. I'm always striving to bring relevant content to you, so if you have any suggestions, please do email me at tnradio@microsoft.com. And if you've suggested content in the past but haven't heard any of it yet, keep checking back weekly as I haven't forgot about any of those suggestions. We do have some great interviews coming up within this month and also in the upcoming months. So if you haven't already, go ahead and set that RSS feed. Thanks as always for listening. I look forward to next time. For TechNet Radio, I'm Aurora Queen.
Have comments or want to request a story idea? Call us at 1-877-814-6506.